I mean, that's a good start to interviewing you about podcasting. First of all, hello, I'm Austin Yorsky. I'm joined by Sarah, also known as Kosvignon, best known for Runaway Dracaena and various other artistic projects. What kind of plugs do you want? Blue Sky at Kosvignon, stuff like that?
Yeah, hi, Sarah, Kosvignon here. I do Runaway Dracaena, which is a webcomic that I've been running since the start of the pandemic, so 2020. It's been going for 4 years in May of this year, so that's exciting. The anniversary is coming up soon. And then I'm like Kosvignon in most social media spaces like Blue Sky and Tumblr and Instagram. The Instagram has like _SD attached to it because I guess someone else had the Kosvignon username, or at least I wasn't able to use it.
Yeah, Kosvignon, is that a portmanteau of cosmic and mignon? Like,
yeah,
is that
exactly.
French for cute, I've learned.
Yeah, it's cosmic and then cute, so it's like it's like cosmic cutie, but said in like a more like fun portmanteau kind of way, because I remember my thought process specifically was, I was like a teenager at the time, it's like I can't have my online handle and like the art that I'm attached to, like what I would like to be like a business someday, be like a stupid fandom name, but like a silly fandom name that like can't really be traced back to me as easily as like something that I made up myself.
Yeah, like you're trying to get a job in the animation industry in your 30s, and you're like, oh yeah, check all my artwork under Miles Edgingworth. This is my Miles Edgeworth themed edging pornography.
For the real life example, my DeviantArt username and username up through like my teens was Zim Gal Forever, spelled with an A-H instead of an E-R.
Incredible. I feel like you and I are not from the same generation, but Invader Zim definitely damaged both of our brains, so that's fun.
Invader Zim unites, like, at least a couple of generations of, like, the 20 to 30-somethings.
Yeah, so I got off track of my intro a little bit. I was going to say at the beginning, a good place to start the interview podcast is asking you about how you got into podcasting, because this, I don't think, was your goal. I don't think you set your sights on the microphone years ago. So I guess to open this up, this is Crew Gunk. It's a interview show, kind of like, you know, Talking Dead. We're going to talk about Dice Funk, our main show. I'm going to read some credits. We're going to have a good time, but mostly I'm going to talk to the players about their characters and their approach to the, you know, role-playing, the writing process, things of this nature. But for, you know, the first couple, especially people we haven't heard as much from, it's also just a good place to get attached, you know, just to have some parasocial enmeshment with the audience. So how did you get here?
So my partner, Charlie, we were still in the phase of, like, me having to come up and visit them instead of like living together. And back in like September of 2016, they recommended both Dice Funk and Word Funk to me. And I listened to Dice Funk first because you guys had just started Lorelei and like it was your first season DMing and stuff. And I got really attached. So then I started listening to Word Funk and I was like, it's so fun and funny that like these three guys can like sit down every week and like talk about stupid bullshit for an hour. And, like, I've definitely, like, listened to more podcasts since then, but those are, like, the two main ones that I, like, latched onto for a good several years. And they inspired me to, like, try podcasting, like, way early on. Like, me and Charlie tried to do podcasts, like, once or twice, but those have been erased from history. Those are gone, wiped from the sands of time.
Oh man, how I wish I could do that to my own. I'm too public. I mean, talking about use stage names, pen names on the internet. I logged on sometime, you know, when I was in my teens, and the internet was like, "What's your name?" And I was like, "Austin Yorsky." And that's just been the whole thing. I have no plausible deniability. Anything I've ever done is out there. It's attached to my legal Christian name. I just have to live with that.
Yeah, definitely same. I used my legal name as my like email for people to commission me for like years, just because like I didn't really see any point not to. Like, I do have a like an official like work email now that's just kosmignon.info@gmail.com, but like I used my name for a long time.
Yeah. So sometimes I regret it because I would have liked to have been able to be cringe online and not held accountable for that. But I guess it does help the unified branding. There's never any confusion about who I am, you know? So that's nice. But so I'm gonna ask you some questions and throw in some names here. I got some feedback in the first episode. People were like, where can I send in questions? And the sponsored questions of Crew Gunk are just me interspersing the supporters of the show with my organic interview questions. I'm not actually reading these from anywhere, but I do think that's funny that it came off as prepared instead of me just scrambling. So I would like to thank Faith and Valor. Have a good month. Creators, love all that you do. This is for Brunch, Austin Tiene El Abuelo, and Joseph Tombrello for this question, which is, how did you arrive at Lillian's Sparridge, Season 11 Bard? We're all very excited to see where this is going, but how did you get to the point in episode one where we find this character?
So Lillian started from an interesting place because basically by the time that I had been able to tell you that I was available to like come onto the season as a player, the themes of the two sides had basically been decided already. So like when I stepped in, like basically like you messaged me like in the group chat, like, okay, we've got like plant people and wet people, and you wanted to be part of the Psychonaut season, so you're a plant person. And so the first thing I wanted to do with being a dryad was like figure out which plant I wanted to take like the most of my inspiration from, because the way I usually build D&D characters is that I start with like a singular concept and build out from there. Like Gladys, my season 9 character, was let's make a kobold that's like a potion maker and start and like what like spiral out from there. Lillian was let's make like some kind of like flower actor and spiral out from there. And I had to like I basically like listed every single flower I could think of, like flowers used in magic, flowers with like specific meanings, and eventually landed on Lily of the Valley because I think they have a very interesting and unique shape, and they kind of both look like bells and like little ghosts, and that fit like the College of Spirits that I was looking into before I kind of reflavored it to be more like the College of like actor drama theater kid.
Yeah, I mean, so I had you in mind for the Psychonauts idea for a while because I know you're a big fan of that series. You know, I follow you on various social medias. You've done a lot of art for Dice Funk, but there's some other fandoms you're involved in. And so I was seeing that in my timeline. And I was like, you know, I love Psychonauts and Persona and other series that like where the mind is an environment. So I was keeping you in mind for that. I didn't even mean to make a pun, keeping you in mind. But when Quinn and I were kicking back and forth the idea of like, what's the gimmick of the two sides? And then I was like, oh, well, Shasera, you know, if you're available to do Psychonauts. So it all fell neatly into place. But I guess next question, sponsored by Simon Lee, Conduit of Chungus, Bearer of Dinkus, Minion of John Con, Extellaris, and Concept Champion of the Crab Salute. That's incredible. How are you finding playing Lillian so far? I know you started off, you're kind of the catalyst for the first combat of the campaign when there's the dandelions are attacking the bovine, and you kind of jump in. But then in the next combat against the fire elementals, you know, I think you've had some trouble attacking and fighting and stuff. I'm curious of how you're finding it so far. Is a bard a little bit more complex than you were expecting?
Yeah, definitely. Playing a bard is more complex than I'm expecting because I really love bards like thematically, like as like a narrative in like a narrative sense, because it's like you are like making magic from like the thing that you like to do. That's basically like what I do as a living anyways. And but like a lot of bardic spells are either like their help spells, their support spells, or like any of the like damaging spells that I can find are like big AoE or like cone spells that could potentially hit my teammates. So I have a lot of trouble like figuring out how to do combat in a way that feels like I'm not screwing anyone over. And so I've struggled a lot with that particular aspect. And I've been having a lot of fun playing Lillian outside of combat, but something that I've been trying to rein back in as of this recording right now is trying to not make them sound so stupid, I guess, because the whole purpose, the character flaw that I went into this with is that they're like naive to the point where it's a kind of concerning about like the goodness in people's hearts, but I don't want them to sound like they're just running into things and being a little idiot.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have a good spectrum where it seems like, you know, Stranger is more cynical, has some kind of dark agenda, and then you're on the naive side, and you know, Hylia thinks she's in the middle. Who knows where she's going? You know, you and I are living two arcs in the future. But I want to see some movement there because I like the setup, but you know, we always have a lot of fun developments and twists in our show, so that people never end up where they start. And I am curious where Lillian's going to go. I think there's some really exciting doors you could walk through.
I definitely feel like this arc coming up that like we are about to play and that people will hear like 2 months-ish from now, I feel like I want this to be the one where I'm a little more decisive and I like pick a door and I enter it and I follow.
Yeah, I think we're setting up for that. So the audience has heard the first one we can call like the Roman arc, or you know, I don't want to give away. I guess this is a full spoilers podcast, but everyone knows that the doppelganger quest that started the season off, where you're Lillian is nice and helpful, but there's not like any big bold thing you do necessarily. In the next arc that they're about to hear, we make some choices, and I think that's like setting the stage for you know the next kind of development. So, what did you think? I guess I'm going to ask you about the arcs that are completed. So far, let's do a supported sponsored question by Eardrum Espresso, C.A. Little, and Christman, finally changing his Patreon name. How did you feel about the first mystery? This is Quinn's first time DMing on Dice Funk, and I thought she really knocked it out of the park. Did you really vibe with the mystery and everything?
Yeah, I think that the mystery that Quinn set up was very interesting, and I had a lot of fun trying to figure out what it was. I was the last person in the room to actually get it like connected together, just because I simply forgot what changelings look like, which is funny because I've drawn someone's changeling OC as a commission before.
Yeah, I mean, it's always funny to ask a question about the players, like, oh, did you like that? Because, you know, are you going to say in front of everyone, no, that sucked, my guy? would you hurt my feelings? But just to be honest, and I think this is a place of honesty, I was feeling a little like I got overshadowed, like I got a little owned, because I thought Quinn's mystery was so good. And my first arc, the crab arc, was basically just a comedy tutorial. It was just a bunch of people doing little voices. You know, there's not really that much to it. I had fun, but, you know, I had the first time I was like, damn, I kind of got embarrassed in front of everyone. Quinn's killing it.
Yeah, Quinn's doing a really good job, and I think that like for it being like the first like go at like DMing like a full season, like I think that she's been doing a really great job. She's been very like courteous and helpful like behind the scenes when I'm trying to figure things out, like, Quinn, can I please change like half of my spell sheet because I don't know how to use these.
Yeah, I was actually looking because your bard has a unique ability. It's not you know, in the normal book, so I was looking up how it works, and it's a little complicated even for me, and I was kind of shocked to realize bards cannot learn haste, which I think is the best support spell. So I thought that was an interesting choice. Maybe it'd probably just be too good if they could do that. If they could, you know, crush any social encounter and also make your barbarian or fighter fucking the Flash. So I guess I get that from a balance perspective. But yeah, it is harder to use support magic than I thought it would be.
Yeah, it's definitely like, I think with what I figured out for my character sheet now, I should have a bit of an easier time like wrapping my head around it for the next arc. But I also think the next time that I do get to like record for like a season or like a one-off of Dice Funk, I'll probably like pick a barbarian and hack and slash. I'll pick something just much easier to work with.
Yeah, I had a great time playing Wendy McDonald last season because I knew exactly what I was going to do every turn. There was never a question, which freed up so much brain space, so much RAM to think of jokes and trouble I could get into. So it's not for everyone. You know, there have been seasons I remember in Markov where Laura's like, all I can do is shoot. So, you know, it's, I think you should try it out at released until you
see how you like it. I am jealous that you played a wild magic barbarian, because that would be my choice for a subclass if I did like pick to be a barbarian for like a future season.
I mean, there's a limited number of subclasses. We repeat eventually. I think we've had a couple of warlocks of the same thing. But, you know, I think even if you repeat, you could probably do your own spin on it. So nothing's off the table. Next question, Nephis Decidia, the Queer Sheep. Love the cast, love the credits, and the listeners. Thank you very much. Also, Squishy Fishy and Marine Science Guy, all sponsoring this question. How are you finding the player-to-player downtime? This is a big swing. This is kind of a gimmick of this season. I was a little nervous going in, but how do you feel just chopping it up? You did your first scene with Sketch, I believe.
Yeah. I think that it was really fun to be able to interact with, like, the other side of the table, like, so to speak. Because, like, me and Skitch, like, I tend to, like, ask Skitch sometimes for, like, help with, like, understanding what the fuck a spell does. and so we already have, like, a rapport. And, like, it was fun to, like, establish, like, oh, our characters have been friends for a while. Because Lillian had to wait for, like, the resurrection thing to go through.
Yeah, and you've done another downtime because we're living in the future. Is there anything about that one that's like, are you thinking this is something we should do in future seasons? This is literally me just asking for real feedback from my show. Or do you think it's more useful to do NPCs? And, you know, why? I'm just curious what people like and, you know, dislike about the approaches.
I think that, like, in this, like, split season, like, format that you've been, like, exploring for the past season or so, I think, like, connecting the two sides together like this through, like, PC to PC interaction is very fun, and I like it. It feels like it's hard to, like, figure out when to engage with the NPCs because of it, but that's, like, something that's, like, hard to figure out what the balance would be, because there's a compromise either way. You either, like, talk to the NPCs more or you talk to the PCs more.
Yeah, there's limited time for everything, which is also why I'm so stingy with even introducing new NPCs. Kind of part of the reason I did the crab arc the way I did was because I was like, the fewer named characters they have to remember, the deeper they can get into, you know, whatever one or two characters they really latch onto. So yeah, it's hard. There's just so little time. I guess you could do hundreds of episodes of the season if you wanted to. There's nothing stopping us.
But, like, I have really enjoyed, like, the player-to-player character interactions. Like, the one that is in the future for the listeners was one that I had a lot of fun with for, like, the reasons of, like, me trying to figure out how to, like, play Lillian more proactively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was surprised at, like, Hialeah and Barbella's dynamic. Like, on paper, if you would have asked me, I'd be like, oh, they have interesting discussions about philosophy and religion or whatever. But actually doing the scene really put me on the spot, and I realized Hialeah was way ruder than I thought. And then, of course,
yeah.
Both Reaper scenes so far have been absolutely hysterical. So.
Quinn is really killing it as Reaper. I think both of those scenes were really funny, like, for the people that she has to interact with.
Yeah, Reaper's great. In the first episode, I think, of Wet Team, you hear me joke about how nervous I am, because I was like, you know, you're just being Shadow the Hedgehog. Like, maybe that joke will run too thin or whatever. But the response to Reaper has been unanimous. Everyone loves her. She's very funny, but also has, like, an obvious, like, weight of sadness on her shoulders. It's, it's a lot of stuff going on there. So let's say the next supported question here. Brent, still the every episode of Dice Funk Goatly. A werewolf forgets to take their meds sometimes too and chase Sterling. A classic question usually gets brought up every post-mortem, but I'll ask you now. We'll see how our feelings evolve through the season. Who's your favorite NPC so far? Like, if you were doing a downtime with NPCs, who would you have wanted to spend more time with?
Because, like, one of them is kind of a spoiler for later on, because I don't think they've been properly introduced. So like, the one that I'll say that I do really like is Dumas. Like, I think that they're very charming in their wet cat kind of way.
Yeah. The audience is going to get a lot more Dumas in the next episode. I think there's going to be a full conversation there. It's basically how the next episode opens. So I hope people like them. Quinn really taps into something very personal for this poor character. But yeah, this whole, you know, the kind of premise of the season, we're picking people to bring back. There's like a world in which we just say no to everyone. Like, we're just like, absolutely not. Nope. Fuck this person. And then the gig is just empty. I wonder how that would be. I think we're going to probably end up having a mix just because every, you know, arc I've seen so far is like dynamic and interesting and there's lots of choices, but, it must be pretty scary from Quinn's perspective to just be like, I could have every single NPC from every Mind Palace or none of them. And we just have to deal with that.
Last thing about NPCs is that I haven't gotten to spend much time with him, but I do like Harper. He is like a very fun, jovial kind of spirit. And I feel like if I did get to spend more time with him, that would be a fun scene.
Yeah, we do need to spend more time. I think it's been a bit since we've seen Harper, but yeah, the cast is, you know, growing at an exponential rate, even when you try to tamp it down, just because, you know, a lot of people live in the setting. Let's do the next question. Supported by Tara is giving money to say hi to all the cats. Aw, I'll tell Bjork when we're done. Egon Steiner and I upped my donations. Austin can finally have a family, and you should too. Thank you. I think we should all, we can all make it together, all holding hands into the future. The central, you could call it like the conceit or the gimmick or the premise of the season, the philosophical stuff about bringing people back. Have you found that difficult to kind of work into your comedy? Has it been like too pretentious or annoying to you? Because funny thing that happens a lot of times is we get in the call and then me and Dan will spend half an hour arguing about some minor point where he's like, yeah, well, what if two identical twins died and we put in like one of their bones, would they both come back? You know, just like if one body is moving 50 meters per second east and another body is moving south, you know, and it's just like, are you ever like, I just want to be a plant?
Like, I think the thing about that is that, like, when I'm like in the same recording session as you and Dan, I feel like I am like a little bit behind you guys in terms of like being able to keep up with like the philosophical part of the conversations, because I think I and Lillian have like very like not basic idea like beliefs about how like the resurrection system is and should work. It's just like, I find it so hard to articulate myself, and this is something that I've talked about with the cast, and like, I guess I'll say, like, on air now, is this, like, struggle to get my brain to go fast enough to have something interesting or poignant to add to the conversation before we've moved on.
Yeah, it can be tough, especially with the pressure of having to do it, you know, in front of everyone and knowing everyone's gonna have opinions about it. You know, it's something I see a lot of people who will comment on actual play podcasts, so they'll be like, oh, I would have done this, I would have done that. And it's, I wonder if in the moment, in the call, if you would have done that. I think you'd be surprised how hard it is to, you know, think of all the things possible at your fingertips when you're in the call. So yeah, I think you've, you know, done a good job adjusting to this thing we've kind of thrown you into. I mean, how much D&D experience did you have before all this?
I played like one or two. Like I've tried to like play D&D in some like indie TTRPG stuff with like my partner and our friend. So we've done like a little bit of like both of those, but never really completed anything. And I've also done like text chat D&D, where it's like no one's like getting into like a group chat or like a table and like playing, but like we text respond to each other and wait for each other's turns. I played like my very first character like that. She was a barbarian gnome named Edith.
Barbarian gnome is a good combination, but I mean,
yes, I still love her very much.
But those were like, yeah, let's go beat up some goblins, right? You're like, you weren't like, well, yeah, I have to do a Hegelian dialectic between these two philosophical, because people are going to say like, oh, you didn't develop that theme, you know? People are going to like, where's the arc to your character? You know, this is a very different expectation.
Yeah, definitely like more like classically, like let's go beat up some guys and like fight some rats or whatever.
Yeah. Next question, sponsored by Miles and Danny. Love Dice Funk forever. Away down under the banyan tree, never knew how much that healing water meant to me. And Dr. Goatman. That second one had a quotations. I think it's a lyric or something. So we're looking forward to future seasons. We've been talking about Dragon Season and Pumpkin Season and also one shots. I guess my question is, do you have anything you want to tease or anything you want to maybe start to work on? I don't know if you've ever thought about DMing a one shot. Obviously, you're invited to. Anything like that that you want to get the people excited about?
So I've always like thought that it would be cool to be able to DM a one shot. My problem is that I've never DM'd before in my entire life. And my first, like the one time was like trying to DM like a D&D like beginner module with like my partner and friend. And like I said, that didn't really get very far. So I would be scared for my first real actual attempt to be something that I have to put on the air and everyone judges me for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was scary, I could say. I did that. I recorded it, season 2, episode 1. So, it's, there's precedent.
It definitely would be cool to be able to do it. I have, like, I don't have any solid ideas. I can't, like, sit here and be like, oh, like, I have something with, like, Dan's pumpkins or whatever. Like, like I don't have, tune in for my one shot about a bunch of people playing goblins. Let's go, everybody. But like, it's not out of the cards. I think if I like thought of like a topic that I think would make for like a fun one shot, I would like try to bring it to you and see if we could figure something out.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always bothering Dan with pumpkin ideas. I'm like, yeah, but what if the body could, you know, reassemble after it's been mutilated? What if, let me send you some pictures of some gore I saw.
Because speaking of like Dan's pumpkin thing, I have like mused about like if I wanted to come in for like pumpkin season, because that sounds like it would be fun. But like the vibe that I get is that it's going to be very horror in the gore and like actually scary kind of stuff. And I don't want to like come in here as like the little weenie wimp that like slows everything down.
Yeah, I mean, anything's on the table. I think Dan did say, maybe on his crew gunk, he said, Austin, the difference between you and me is I will kill your dog as a DM. So, I think he does have a different style than me. That's something to think about because, you know, you got to find what works for you. You can't just try to throw yourself into every little situation. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the end of these sponsored questions for now. I will say I haven't raised the Patreon up to $10 yet. It's still at $5, but I did use a different filter this time. So this was just the names of people who actively asked for a shout out on the hour long credits we used to do. I would just set it to $5 and above and just read the whole list. But this is the filter for the shout out tier. So let me know how you all are feeling about this format. Is there anything else you want to talk about tonight, Sarah? We actually got through my questions pretty quick, but, you know, there's still a lot more Lillian to get to, you know?
Yeah. Let me think. Like, there was definitely, like, Lillian, like, once I, like, do crystallize that, like, idea I have, like, okay, I'm going to base this dryad off of Lily of the Valley, and I'm going to make them a bard of this subclass. I then, like, do this thing where I just, like, focus on, like, visual development, basically, because I'm such, like, a visually minded artistic person. So, like, if I open the drawer of my desk right now and I look down, there's a giant pile of sketches that I've done, like, during work or, like, when I've just had, like, a piece of paper out somewhere. And I would, like, doodle, like, okay, what if Lillian had, like, sisters? What if Lillian had, like an aunt or a brother? Like, what if Lillian's family was from here or there? Like, just, like, the way that my character, like, design ethos for, like, Dungeons & Dragons characters works is there's, like, probably, like, half of this stuff is never going to become relevant, and I don't mind that it's not going to become relevant, but I like it to be there because it helps me flesh out the character in my own mind, because, like, it feels like they're, like, a person who existed before we hit record on the first episode.
Yeah, and it gives you something to draw on. You know, you'll just be talking and you'll be like, this reminds me of my brother. He did this and this and this. Like, I have your sheet up here. You have a little write-up for Lillian's father, mother, sister, and another sibling, and then Needles, your friend you mentioned. So, like, all this is here. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to come over and fight goblins with us, but it could be something, and that's interesting. I mean, how much have you and Quinn worked together to be like, oh, you know, this is going to, the reverberations of my deeds will get back to my home village.
We've definitely been doing some like off-air discussion about like what will particularly become relevant. It hasn't really involved Lillian's family, but like it has involved like Lillian's bestie, Needles, because like she is like the person that Lillian resurrected. So she is more like immediately relevant and also here instead of like back like the equivalent of like five states.
Yeah, the audience hasn't seen Needles on screen yet. I have, so I know, but we'll definitely get there eventually. You don't have any plans to try to get the party to go to your home village of Yggdrasil, as you've written in all caps?
No, I can't really think of a reason why we would. Like, if something funny or like interesting happens that would prompt that, maybe I would try to incorporate it. Like, let's all quest to Yggdrasil and learn about the community theater that I'm from, and there's like a mystery here about someone who died.
Yeah, I've definitely kind of, in my mind, broken the show down into there being two kinds of seasons, two kinds of campaigns. One is about a place, you know, like Grendel or Ilium, and some are like journeys, like, you know, Lorelei or Wormwood. And in the journey-style campaign, we could definitely go to Yggdrasil, we could see your family, that's fine. But season 11 feels more like a place season. I don't know how you feel about, like, how attached you / Lillian are to the Banyan Island or the Banyan. Were you concerned at all about your character being like, oh, I'm a performer, I want to entertain people, I don't really care about, you know, being an adventurer or anything like that?
I think the thing that Lillian cares about the most when it comes to being an entertainer, and like the reason that I like have them staying at the gig and like being a vibe checker, is that above everything else, they think that like being able to feed the soul with like entertainment and like being like having like joy in your life, it is something that like just makes everybody's lives better. And if they have to like go into someone's mind palace and fight like mental visions of people on fire to be able to do that, like that's something that they will do because they care about like the end goal of like bringing happiness to people.
Yeah. I think you and I have talked before about D&D characters kind of needing to be slightly unreasonable, because the average reasonable person, when faced with a demon or a dragon, would not get involved. They would run away. So the kind of person who would be a D&D character has to be a little unusual, you know? And
yeah.
I'm curious about how you feel about, like, you made a pretty, I would say, you know, a reasonable, normal person. And how badly are we going to traumatize you? But for comparison, your season 9 character, Gladys, you know, getting them into the season, I had to be like, you've been sent away. You can't go back. I have cut off your options, you know? And so you were unilaterally took your choices away. I love Gladys. Gladys was great. But that was also, you know, I had to kind of use DM contrivance to kind of force your hand.
I think that DM contrivance was pretty good for Gladys's like as a first character, because like it gave me less reason to backpedal, I guess. And I think I made a lot of strong character decisions with Gladys because of it. And Lillian, like, is definitely a passionate person, definitely, like, cares a lot about, like, the people that they call their family and friends. And, like, the way that dovetails into adventuring is a little hard to, like, cross the wires on, but I do think I'm getting there. And I do think that Lillian's, like, theatrical nature is part of what makes them an unusual person, like enough to be the D&D character.
Yeah. So there's 6 player characters this season, and I was a little worried when we were like, oh, this is a season about bringing people back from the dead. That like all 6 characters would be like, I want to bring my friend back. Like, that's just such an obvious motivation. So the way it shook out was only one person wanted to. So Reaper has mentioned that they're bringing someone back. We don't have that many details, just kind of under her breath in that first arc. She mumbled like, I'm going to bring him back, Vegeta voice. Mm-hmm. And you have previously resurrected your friend Needles, as you said. How did you land on that motivation as opposed to wanting to bring someone back or being uninvolved? Because I thought it was curious, not bad or anything, but just that, you know, Barbella and Hialeah and Stranger are just like, I'm just going to kind of scope the situation. I'm not trying to get in the Riddle Snake's business.
I think the reason I decided for I've already brought my friend back instead of I'm trying to get my friend back is that now that Needles has been brought back to life, Lillian almost has like kind of like a feeling of like a moral obligation to do the same for others, because bringing back their best friend was like the best that they've ever felt. And in their like motive to like bring other people happiness, they think that like bringing someone else's loved one back to life is like the highest possible version of like the extreme of like bringing someone joy is bringing their loved one back. So like, why reject that opportunity?
Sure. I would definitely love to see Lillian express that, or, you know, have some kind of big speech or something, because I've paired you with kind of 2 cynical people, so I would love if Lillian got to, you know, yell at Stranger or Hialeah at some point.
It's difficult to actually, because like I have all these like, I do genuinely have all these like complicated ideas about like how Lillian wants to express themselves and like prove that their way of thinking isn't like naive stupidity. But like I said earlier, it's hard for me to figure out how to say that in the moment. And oftentimes, like, I'll be like done with a recording, and then like a day later, I'll be like, oh, I could have said that. I could have done something more interesting and said this thing that would have like made the character more interesting. But I can't go back on that now because this is improv.
Yeah, basically the hour after recording, I always block out of my schedule to lay down on my face and regret everything I said or didn't say. That's part of the process, unfortunately. But I think like in every conversation between our dry characters, Lillian is pretty much always right. You know, it's like your character is the one who's not a creepy little freak, but it's you have to fight both of our very strong personalities, unfortunately.
Yeah. And like being able to just say it out loud, even like an out of character situation like this one right here, does help me like figure out how to say it for the future. Like I've had conversations with like you or Quinn or the other players where like I'm trying to figure out like what I want to do. And then just that little bit of planning helps me like give a better performance the next time. There are some times where I felt like I didn't do super good, but then the next recording I feel like I've kind of redeemed myself, and I'm trying to like keep pushing until I have something that I'm really happy with, and maybe like pushes against the fact that you guys are you and Dan have such big like very well like played characters.
How much do you like it when we talk out of character about our motivations? I've seen differing opinions, not just on our show, but on other podcasts, where someone would be like, well, my guy likes this or doesn't like this, so I'm going to do this. And people are, you know, sometimes fans will respond like, in the comments or whatever, be like, why do you explain, you know, why do you over explain everything? Why can't you just do what your character does? Do you worry about that? Or do you find that like helpful to like situate your character's current like frame of mind?
I do find it helpful to be able to take an aside out of character to like try to explain what's going through my character's head, because trying to just do and say like in character, I need like to give some backing sometimes so that I can even figure out what I am trying to do. And like on the other side, like as a listener, like just taking like the last season, for example, I found it very helpful whenever you would take an aside to like explain what Wendy's motivations were, because it was interesting to listen to. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Wendy is a very engaging character.
I think I feel especially compelled to do that when my character is being difficult. Like if I was like, you know, Skitch plays a lot of characters who are like obviously always doing the correct moral thing. And it's like, you don't really need to explain it that much. But like if I'm going to blow up a military man's head without asking anyone around me what their thoughts are, I feel like I do have to kind of out of character at least explain myself, because that's a little disruptive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being disruptive, I think, is like the hardest part of being on this podcast, because I'm both someone who is very polite and doesn't like to talk over people, and I'm also someone who makes characters who are not very disruptive. I make very, like, nice protagonist people.
Yeah. Are you thinking that Lillian and Gladys are both pretty similar to you? How far out of your comfort zone have you gotten?
I think they're both pretty similar to me. Like, Gladys, like, more so because she kind of embodied a lot of my nerves about being on the show for the first time. And then Lillian kind of embodies a lot of my general like beliefs about how art like affects people and why it's important to do it. And both of them have been pretty squarely in my comfort zone. And to go back to that like question about like teasing for the future, if I did the next time I do like decide on a character, not only would I be trying to like do a different class and like do something that might be easier for me to work with, I might try to make a character that is a little more disruptive. I might make someone that's a bit more of a bitch.
This is asshole. She hates you. She's a fighter. Not their enemies. Her party members. Roll initiative. Sarah, you're too far outside your comfort zone. Go back.
She's gone too far. We have to stop her.
I mean, making Gladys your character have a primary characteristic of being nervous when you're nervous, honestly, mwah, chef's kiss, stroke of genius. You're like, oh, I'm so good at acting. I'm not about to throw up on air. This is theater.
This is the theater. Oh, yeah. There was one more thing that I wanted to talk about with, like, building my character Lillian, which was that the Gladys was basically me talking, but like with a little bit of a higher, more nervous cadence, because I was trying to differentiate between me and myself, uh-huh, like with the least effort possible. Lillian is the first time that I'm trying to do something like an active character voice, like voice acting, trying to like get in character, like as I speak. And the hardest thing about it is that Quinn does so many good accents and character voices that I keep like mimicking off of her, and like it melts into my voice and I'm like, no, Lillian's not Southern.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people drifting into cowboy voice, especially on Wet Side, but yeah, it's pretty difficult. I don't think any of us are trained voice actors or anything. We're all kind of, you know, just being very off the handle, off the cuff about it. That kind of why I decided to do no voice for Hialeah was because everyone is bringing so much voice.
Yeah. And that,
I've listened to podcasts before where everyone is doing the most and it gets overwhelming. So I was like, Hialeah is going to be a cool oasis in this desert for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, I think the character voice in trying to be the theatrical person that Lillian is like the most out of my comfort zone I am.
Yeah, I know you said a little bit like, oh, you're trying to go for like a Linda Belcher, New Jersey thing. I think we were talking about maybe it being like a mid-Atlantic thing. It's hard. I couldn't do any of those voices. So you're braver than I am. I stick with like the three accents I know I can do.
Uh-huh.
People did seem to like the crabs, though, so that was nice. I think they're silly little friends.
Yeah, the crabs are fun. We love crab family in this house.
Yeah, I think you haven't gotten to interact with them yet, but I am sure they'll be in the gig at some point. You can hang, you know, with them. But also, yeah, they had to be kind of not particularly deep characters, because I was trying to keep the focus on Wet Team and like was introducing them, and also I didn't know who was going to survive, you know, because Quinn was like, Reaper will intimidate and attack whoever she wants, and I was like, okay, well, to start off, let's have some red shirts, because I don't know who's going to be important yet. You just start pummeling all my dudes to death, but I think it worked out.
I think unless you have any other questions, that's probably everything that I, like at least super important I wanted to say about Lillian. If I think of anything else later down the line, I could probably, like, address it in the post-mortem or something.
Yep, we're still going to do the post-mortem this season, so any of those kind of big spoiler questions, you know, we can't yet be like, oh, what do you think about the big reveal in episode 35, you know? So, at this point... We've talked about most of what we can. Mm-hmm. Let me double check here. I have your character sheet pulled up. I'm just looking over real quick and being like, oh wow, there's so much that I didn't even have in my head, because I'm not the DM for your side, so I'm not I'm not keeping these all in, you know, at a moment's notice so I can pull them. But is there anything you want to say about the character's name? Is Lillian just Lily of the Valley? What's Sparage?
Oh, yeah. So Lillian Sparage, like, I landed on the first name, like, obviously first, because, like, I picked the flower that I wanted to go with, and I was like, okay, I'll use the flower as their first name. Last name is, so Lily of the Valley comes from the Asparagi family. Let me double check.
Wow, it's a double plant name. Incredible.
Asparagaceae. I'm probably not pronouncing that super right, but like Fae and like all of like Fae immediate family are named from plants in that family. So like Lillian's father, Agave Sparage, Lillian's mother, Tulip Sparage, Lillian's older sister, Hyacinth, Lillian's little niece Nibbling, Bluebell. They're all from the same plant family. I thought that would be a fun touch to like connect them in that way, even if they weren't all literally Lily of the Valley.
Yeah, it's very fun, all these little blurbs you have on your sheet. If you haven't read them, I recommend it. For the little sibling, it just says, a baby, goo goo gaga. So, a deep dossier. Also, your flaw is really interesting. I'll defend some pretty awful actions if I get even the slightest hint they may have had a good reason for them. That's juicy.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope we get to push you to believe in some things on air. That's always exciting.
Yeah, that's one that I'm like trying to like enact. It, like the last, like the arc that we had just finished was one that like really tested me on that, because I'm like trying to be like, well, Lillian believes in this, but I think that this, I think very differently about this, and I wouldn't do what Lillian might do.
Absolutely. Yeah, this next arc, I don't want to overhype it, but it goes some places. It was supposed to be a 3-episode arc. It turns into a 4-episode arc.
It was a lot. A lot of things happened. There's a lot of highs and lows for Lillian specifically.
I'm kind of envious that I don't get to hear it as a listener, because I bet it's a ride. Mm-hmm. Just having it come at you. It's very exciting. So, I mean, honestly, the next Wet arc too is pretty sick. So I think you can't go wrong. It's going to be good. So,
yeah, we had a bit of a cursed recording week this week, but hopefully things will get back on track next time.
Yeah. Well, everything is going pretty well from my perspective, thanks to the generous support of our listeners, people we named here, everyone on the Discord. Shout out. You make doing this show so much fun, and I'm glad we got to do this little recording for you. We'll be back roughly at the end of the next arc / a month or so. That's the schedule for Crew Gunk, is roughly arc, roughly month, not as regimented as the normal show, but we'll be back. Of course, the bonus show, Spewpunk. Quinn and I earlier today recorded our Oscar special. That was a lot of fun. Is there anything else you want to plug, Sarah, on our way out?
Yeah, I also wanted to plug that I have my own Patreon that's at Cosmignon as well. And that's where I post like early pages for my webcomic. and early visual development stuff for my comic about the part of Arabella I was on. I'm doing all of the fight scenes first because drawing fight scenes is the hardest thing in the world to me. So if I get that out of the way first, then I can focus on the fun part, which is characters talking to each other. My favorite thing.
Yeah. Oh man, these pictures I can't move at all. How am I supposed to show the punching?
Yeah.
Seems hard. That's why I like this medium. It's just my voice. I could be dressed like a clown. You would never know. There's no, I can't mess up any visual stuff. So that's why I ended up here in front of the microphone. But thank you all very much for listening. We'll catch you on Dice Funk every Sunday until the heat death of the universe. Patreon.com/AustinYorski, Patreon.com/Cosmignon. All the links in the description. Of as always, thank you for joining us, and we will see you very soon. I'm coming after you. I'm chasing you right now. Here I come. You can't run. It's too late. Sometimes the spirit moves me. I don't know what to tell you.
It's beautiful. But I would also like to say thank you, and I'll see you guys in the next arc.